Well, we definitely can be very warm and friendly. I know for me, like, I definitely would see the best in people. I would have a hard time finding flaws. So we're thinking the best of you. And I remember telling one of my DA boyfriend before we broke up, like, the problem is I always see the best in you and you always see the worst in me, because he was always flaw finding. And I felt like he would look at me in this negative light. And I always looked at him so positive. And my friends would be like, aren't you mad at him? He's like doing this, and this, and that's not cool, and blah, blah, blah. And so it's a superpower, but we also have to watch it. We have to kind of equilibrate and see the person's negative traits too, because we tend to look more at people on the positive side.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I am so excited you're here. I am your co-host, Thais Gibson, along with our new special host, Mike Dizio. This is a podcast that discusses everything related to integrated attachment theory, the new attachment theory, along with the subconscious mind, relationships, communication, needs, boundaries, and so much more. Throughout this podcast, you'll see a series of episodes I upload with new information, educational tips all about how to thrive in relationships and really master your emotional state in your life, along with special guests hosted by Mike Dizio to discuss all of these amazing topics in some longer form content. Thank you so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome back, Personal Development School podcast listeners and viewers. We have a special podcast for you today. So as you remember, last year we did the Ask an FA Anything podcast. Today we're doing the Ask an AP Anything podcast. So we asked our community from the Personal Development School to send us questions to ask some anxious, preoccupied individuals. And we rounded up two of the best people that I know, Renee and Amanda. They were previously anxious, preoccupied, but have done a lot of work on healing, a lot more secure. I don't know what percentage you guys want to say you are, but I know you've done a lot of work on yourselves and you have a lot of insight into sort of anxious, preoccupied and some of the challenges that come with it. And then in healing, sort of what you had to do to get there. So really excited to hear about that and hear more about you and your journey and inspire some people who are listening today. So I just want to start off, Renee and Amanda, first of all, thanks for being here. I was wondering if you can give a quick little introduction, and then we'll start with some of our questions that our viewers want to know about anxious preoccupieds.
Sure. Thanks, Mike. So happy to be here. And yes, yeah, so I, my name's Renee. I was definitely very, very, very anxious, preoccupied. I've done a lot of work. I now work for the Personal Development School. I teach the emotional resilience class, and I also co-host and do the post-webinar hosting. So I like to do those after parties. I've been with PDS for a while and just happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Excellent. And Amanda?
Thanks, Mike. It's Amanda Harris. I've been with the Personal Development Schools probably since about 21 and did lots of work. Always joked that it was like my second job. And then whenever the IAT coaching came along, that first round did the IAT coaching, and I'm a certified integrated attachment theory coach, and doing some of that on the side and excited. That's one of my goals for the year, is to do some more work on building up my clientele for the coaching. So thank you so much for having us on.
Yeah, of course, for sure. And obviously, you know, I've seen you guys in the school for the last little while, and you've both done amazing, come such a long way. So it's kind of an honor to talk to you guys today. And I think we'll have a good time.
I feel like the three of us really met and got to know each other and got friends whenever you first started hosting that communication scripts class. And we had so much fun in there. For sure.
And we had some good jokes off camera before we started today. So we're warmed up. We're ready to go. Okay, I'll start off some easy ones. For anybody that doesn't know, anxious, preoccupied attachment style, how does that come about? How would you explain that? And like, how do you think it came about for you specifically in your upbringing?
So there was definitely some stuff in the under eight or the under four. But the thing that I know for sure that I remember is that at 8 years old, I lost my father. He passed away. And in the months leading up to his death, my mother, where he was at in the hospital, was about an hour and a half away from where we lived. And I was left with friends and family. My siblings are all much older, so I was a lot like an only child. And I was left with friends and family members, some who I knew well, some who I didn't know that well, while she was over there with him in the hospital. And then after he passed away, she was, I make up, probably an anxious, preoccupied herself. And she did a lot of going out and dancing and dating, and I got left with whoever. So there was a period of time there, and that I'm sure right after his death it probably had a profound effect on me, because I was trying to grieve and she wasn't there. So I know for sure that that's a big, and I had this stepdad that was very in and out all the time. So lots of just what I would call emotional neglect. They always made sure that I had food and water and clothing, but they often weren't there, especially at the times that I really needed them.
Right. Okay. Thanks for sharing. So it was a lot of that sort of intermittent soothing, like there was times where you were soothed and taken care of, and then other times not, and were probably really scared. But with APs, I guess they didn't have enough time of being alone where they developed their own sort of soothing strategies. That's the idea there, right?
Right. And I had people there who cared about me, but they weren't my primary attachment figure. So I think that that's why. And she was there in and out, like you said, with that back and forth with the intermittent reinforcement.
Right. Okay. Thanks for sharing for those insights. Renee, do you want to share?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, a little bit for me was that what happened is my real father kind of left when I was around 6. So I think that kind of abandonment thing, I didn't know he was leaving and then I never saw him again. So that played in. And then my mom worked a lot. So I did get left with different family members, and people were, you know, caring family members that loved me, but same thing, like it wasn't my primary attachment person. So I think that's how that developed.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you for sharing. So I want to know next, what sort of led you to your own healing? Like, was there sort of a catalyst or like a rock bottom or a moment where you're like, I got to do something about this, like right now?
When I read that question, it just made me laugh, because I felt like I always needed the help and was always trying to heal, but just didn't have the tools, like didn't know how to do it. Like it's so uncomfortable being an AP, especially if you're like a severe AP, because all of your regulation is coming from outside of yourself. So you're highly dependent on other people to regulate you. And when they don't, you just are very dysregulated and feels like if you're in a fight with your partner, you can't go on. The whole world comes crashing down. You can't focus on anything else. So it's very challenging. And I always knew like that other people weren't like that in my life. And I was like, why am I this way? But didn't know how to heal it. So yeah, I think I always knew I needed to heal it.
Yeah.
And would have said enough is enough if I had tools anytime, they would have showed up and worked.
For sure. For sure. And Amanda?
That's great. I can relate with what Renee said. I knew something was up, but I wasn't sure exactly what and what to do. I was in a 23-year marriage. I married my high school sweetheart, and it was extremely dysfunctional, both of us. I'm not giving him any more credit for the dysfunction than me. But I guess there was part of me that thought that if I could get away from that dysfunction, I would be okay. And I got divorced in 2018. And so then I wasn't okay. You know, I was very lonely, which is to be expected, but then I'm settling for situationships that were outside of my value system. And like, why can I not let this person go? You know, this is ridiculous. And so that not being able to let go of a relationship that's hurting me, and finally deciding, well, I can't blame my ex anymore because I'm single. What's the deal? And so I probably came across I had been in therapy and it helped, but not the same as the tools and PDFs.
Right. Okay. So there's a lot of things that are tough about anxious preoccupied attachment style. You know, I've talked to a lot of APs and they think, oh, we have it the worst. It's a pretty, pretty rough attachment style to have. But what would you say sort of the toughest thing when you were at your most unhealed, what was sort of the toughest part of being AP? Renee, do you want to go first?
Yeah, not being able to self-soothe, I think, is the toughest part. That's so hard. Like, yeah, just feeling so dysregulated and off when the person doesn't reassure you and show up. It's kind of like a powerless feeling, because you're so dependent on the other person. So it's very challenging, and it's not fun to feel like that. It's not fun to feel dysregulated. It's not, like I said, like if I was in a fight with my partner, it'd be really hard for me to show up to anything. Like to be able to work, to be able to function, used to be very, very difficult for me. So I think that is definitely the hardest part.
Yeah, that sounds tough. I'll hazard a terrible analogy here, but is it the equivalent of like your partner is on a boat and they have the donut thing that they could throw in the water to you to save you? Like they're the one only responsible and you're stuck in the water, just almost like barely hanging on. And sort of they're the only one who's has your life in their hands to save you and make you feel better. Is it sort of like that?
Yeah, that sounds very dramatic, but yeah, pretty true. Especially the more unhealed you are, the worse it is, you know?
Yeah.
So.
I imagine though, how like having the other person being the key to your feeling better and not knowing how to do it yourself. That sounds very like scary for sure.
Yes.
So,
Yeah.
wow. And Amanda, what was sort of the toughest for you?
So even though I'm a lot more healed now, what the toughest has been for me, doing all the work and becoming a lot more secure, finally in my single skin, being secure and happy and meeting my own needs back in, so let's say summer of 22, and then getting into a relationship for 10 months and learning to let another person meet my needs and be vulnerable with them, and oops, it not working out, and having to go back then. For me, even though I'm much more healed now, it's that vacillation between doing it on my own and letting someone else. And oh well, crap, now I've got to learn how to do it myself again. So that's been my breakup was in August, and so that's been a challenge. And it's normal to grieve the loss of a relationship, but just getting back to that point and then being like, do I want to do this again? Yes.
Yeah.
But remembering that sometimes I have to do it all on my own, and sometimes I have a partner to help. So
Right. Okay. Thank you for sharing. Next, I want to know what were some of the core wounds that were like the strongest or like the hardest core wound that you found was the hardest to reprogram?
yeah, I definitely think the abandonment one was really hard to reprogram initially, like the first, yeah, working on that. And I can remember, like, it just brought to mind, like, I was in an 8-year relationship, and I can remember like wanting so badly to be with this person. And then finally, when we, came together and started that relationship, then all I could do was worry about losing him. Like, I was just so worried that he would leave after we got together. So it's like that pain is so strong and so there when you're an AP.
Sure. Okay. And Amanda?
Yeah, definitely alone. I can remember sitting in a webinar just like this, and Thais would talk about the wounds, and I probably cursed because I do that. And I was like, this is not a wound. I am alone. My mother was gone, had passed away. My father had passed away. My siblings were not available to me. I didn't have a partner. My marriage had ended, and I only had my kids half the time. I'm like, this, no, this isn't a win. But even so, I did the work. I was committed to giving it a go. And now all of those things are so much less painful because there's not a gaping wound there. Yeah, it still hurts that those people are gone, but I'm able to, doing that reprogramming work, I'm able to see all the people who are there for me and who love me and I'm connected to.
Yeah, I know sometimes when you start doing the work on reprogramming a core wound, you just don't believe it. Like, for the DA core wounds, if I am defective, well, you have to work with the opposite of that. But it's like, well, no, I really think I'm defective. So it's really hard at first. But I guess the more you do it and the more sort of evidence that you provide through time and repetition, you're going to start to sort of loosen that and then make some real gains with that core wound. But thank you for sharing that. So we're going to get to some member questions now. These are members' questions that were submitted by the community. So we will start with, why do APs need so much reassurance? Why do you need so much reassurance, Renee?
Because we're afraid you're going to leave.
Yeah.
So yeah, we and one thing is we do really well. Like, if we get the reassurance on a little regular basis, like if you just give the AP that, it goes a long way to just like, I still care about you, even if I'm doing something away from you. Like, I still really care about the relationship. We just need like little reassurances along the way, and I think it helps so much.
Is there an ideal amount? Let's say someone avoidant who's listening right now and they're like, oh my gosh, are we talking like I have to message her 6 times a day and let her know? Or like what do you think is a good amount that would sort of satisfy you?
Well, I'll talk for myself. Like, for me, the things that would make me feel really unassured is like I was talking about that boyfriend that I dated. Like, once we got together, I was always afraid to lose him. It would be like he would be around a lot of attractive girls for his work, and there would always be like all these other people around him and a lot of females. And sometimes when he would go to do these kind of jobs, like a little reassurance when he was going to do those things would have been when I needed it. Like, I didn't need it like every day or something like that, but when he was in these certain situations, I would do really well if he gave me reassurance. And he did
Yeah.
do that. He was pretty good about that, especially like earlier on in the relationship.
That sounds like a tough situation for anyone seeing their partner around all these attractive members of
I
the
know, and
opposite sex.
I know, and I always ended up dating people that were in that situation, like either in a band or around lots of women. And so that's when it would really creep up if my partner happened to be someone that was around lots of attractive women. So makes it that much more painful.
Sure. Okay.
Challenging. Yeah.
And Amanda, reassurance, how much do you need? How much is sort of ideal? What do you think?
That's a great, Renee had a great answer. And like the way I think of it is the more you give it, the less I need it. Right. So over time, if you can have a little bit of attunement, oh, her abandonment wins. This is going to trigger her, or I'm gone. Hey, I missed you. I can't wait to see you again. It doesn't need to be over the top. Really. It just a little here and there, generally like salt, just sprinkle it on and we'll be great.
I love it. Our next question is, are all APs codependent and enmeshed? What do we think about that?
That's a good question. I definitely think that, yeah, there's a codependent part in the APs. I think maybe they may or may not be enmeshed, depending, I think. But for me, I definitely had that codependent piece. And that was a great course that helped me so much when I took the codependency course to realize my thought process and what was codependent and what wasn't. So, but yeah, because we're depending too much on the other person to regulate us and to, you know, provide all these things that we need to start giving to ourselves. So yeah, I think we definitely need to do that work.
Perfect. And Amanda, codependency enmeshment.
Yeah, I know I was. I can't speak for all APs, but I'm sure that there's probably definitely a tendency there. Thais would be able to answer that one for sure. But because we want so badly for that other person to be okay. If you're not, then I'm not either. And so it makes sense because if you're not okay, you might leave me, right? So always wanting to make sure that everything is cool is definitely one of our traits.
Okay, interesting. Another thing I wanted to question too was like the fear of loss. That's also quite an AP thing, right? Like, I've heard that APs can sometimes worry about their partner passing away or maybe loved ones. They're not even sick or whatever, but just being really worried something bad might happen to them. Is this like a common AP thing where you worry, even if nothing's really wrong, like worrying that something bad could happen to your loved ones?
I definitely did. If I didn't hear from you, I was like, but I also had a family. My family upbringing was kind of like that. They were worriers. They would worry about a lot of different things. And so I got that a lot growing up. Like, I thought you were dead in a ditch. You know, if you don't check in a certain amount, probably from another AP, probably mother or grandmother.
And I know you have an Italian background, and so do I. My Italian side of the family is like the biggest worriers of all time.
Oh my gosh, that's
so
terrible.
Maybe it's not an AP thing, it's an Italian thing.
It could be the Italian part of me, yes.
Amanda, did you feel you ever had that sort of fear of loss of loved ones?
Think so. Not off the top of my head, not that I can think of. So maybe it is y'all's Italian family.
Yeah. Okay. So next question from the community. How much to share? So when you're dating someone, how little to share when dating? This person says, I'm AP, I obviously overshare. So like, what's sort of a good rule? Like, how much or how little do you think you should share when you're dating someone?
I'll go first on this one because in my more unhealed state, I wanted to let all of my skeletons out of the closet. I think part of it is knowing what the motivation is. If you're going to reject me, let's get it done quickly. Here's all of my bad stuff. Just so you know, let's get it out there. And my therapist really helped me with that one. You know, Amanda, that's old stuff. You don't need to let everybody, like with my most recent relationship, I told him how much student loan debt I had before I told him how much money I had to made to pay it back, if that makes sense. So I'm going to share the bad news first. But I think it's just about sharing slowly over time and protecting my heart. Do I even know this person? And I'm telling them all of these bad facts about myself, right? So just doing it like that slow vetting process that I'm trying to get back into with dating. And the dating webinar is really great about asking one question per day and sharing one thing about yourself per day. If they say, tell me about yourself, don't say, well, my divorce, blah, blah, blah. No, it can be slowly. It's not about how much or how little, it's about how long it takes to do it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally, totally. It's almost like the other person should have to earn a bit of your vulnerability.
Yes.
Like, you're not just gonna give it all of them at once. Because as we know in our learnings, like being vulnerable and open is a good thing. You want to be that way in your relationships. But when you're dating, for sure, you want to sort of drip it out little by little. There's no need to sort of tell everybody everything all at once. And I'm sure they won't want to do the same. So that's great, Amanda. Renee, what would you
sorry,
yeah, go ahead.
And I thought, well, I'm just being honest. And And that's true, but it's not dishonest to slook. It's about privacy and, like you said, letting them earn the right to know all the dirty details.
Yeah, for sure. The dirty details. Renee, what would you say? How much is too much or too little?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about this as you both were talking, and I realized for me, a lot of me oversharing was because I was very emotionally dysregulated. So if there was an uncomfortable silence, I would just fill it up and just like tell them all the things I didn't need to know so soon. But now that I'm in kind of a more regulated space, I don't do that so much. Like there's more thought into what I'm saying. I'm not just like, blah, just giving everything.
For sure. That makes sense. Thanks for sharing. So, okay, next member question. What's the best way to encourage your AP partner to speak up for their needs and get out of people-pleasing mode?
I've got something there because my most recent relationship, he struggled with sharing his needs. And so I realized, and you can kind of do a brain, you know, a reframe for the AP. Hey, I need you to share your needs, right? It's important. You're going to make me happier if you can do that. You know, making sure that they know that it's important to the relationship, right? Mm-hmm. So if the AP thinks that something they're doing is going to endanger the relationship, then just encouraging them, hey, not sharing your needs is what's going to endanger the relationship. And that's a really great way. At least I tried that with my most recent partner. It wasn't successful, but I think that just reminding that person that the health of the relationship depends on it. And that's really important to an anxious, preoccupied.
For sure. And if they're already scared about asking for their needs, if you're reassuring them like, hey, this is a good thing and I actually want you to, that sounds like it should have good result for sure. Renee, what would you say?
Yeah, I love that. I think Amanda hit it right on because APs care so much about their relationship. If you tell them it's going to help the relationship, they're going to want to do it. And just know making them feel safe to do it too. And also for me, especially looking back when I was very unhealed, if my needs didn't get met, they would be expressed in a not so nice sort of passive aggressive way, the way you're not supposed to communicate. You never do X, Y, Z. It's how it would come out rather than I would love it if we could do X, Y, Z together. So
right.
If you don't build that resentment when your needs are getting met. So if you can ask for them in that positive, healthy way, and you know, it's going to help the relationship, and AP is going to be much more willing to do all of that.
Right. Is some of those ways that are negative, if they're, let's say, not getting attention, will an AP maybe try to make them jealous or like do something and be like, oh, hey, so-and-so at work today was asked for my phone number. Like, is there any of that kind of stuff, trying to do things to make them jealous to get the attention back on them?
Oh, Mike, you're going to make us spiller.
Deep, I would never. Dark, I would
horrible.
Never.
We don't have to go there if you don't want.
Yes, it's definitely an AP thing. I definitely use that strategy, and it's don't like to admit it because it's so terrible. Instead of just asking for what I need or if I feel threatened by someone, but yeah, that's something I definitely have not done in a long time. But when I was more in heal, definitely was a go-to.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, someone else is interested if you're not willing to.
And like you said, it's a strategy. Like, it's something you just don't know at the time what is a better way to get your needs met. Exactly. But then once you do the work and do learn communication and understanding, asking for your needs is totally valid, then it becomes easier. But if you don't know, you're just desperate and you're like, I got to make something work, you know?
So, it's never what you want. As an AP, you really want that attention from your partner. You don't want it from anyone else, but that's just a strategy that can be used a lot. And I know it can be so hurtful for the person on the receiving end.
Yeah, so. For sure. Yeah.
I just wanted to pop in here and let you know we are doing a 7-day free trial to the All Access Membership Pass at PDS, which means you get access to literally everything inside of the school. And this includes the 4 live webinars I do with our students every single week. And on top of that, you get access to all of our different courses. We have over 55 different courses on relationships, communication, boundaries, emotional mastery, guilt and shame, learning your needs, so many different facets that are really important to master our lives and feel really good about our lives going forward. And last but not least, there's a daily community event. We have trained facilitators and coaches who are in there doing that work, showing up to support you on your journey every single day. Please join me on the other side. Come check it out. See if it's a fit for you. I'd love to see you there. Go ahead and sign up by clicking the link in the description box below.
Okay, this question was actually my question. I came up with this question. What is the final straw for an AP? When does an AP finally walk away? So as we know, APs kind of tend to stay a little longer than they should. Amanda, I think you touched on that earlier on. What is there something where an AP is finally like, enough, like I can't do this anymore?
I guess it varies from person to person. I think that a stronger your AP-ness is, the worse it has to get. That's such an individual question.
Yeah.
He burned my house down, but I still love him. But I still love him. You know, there's no one size fits all. And that's what the beautiful thing. I'll speak to this since the healing, since the healing began. I instigated a breakup. That was a real milestone for me. And when was that? January of 22, I think. I was in a 3-month relationship and it was not good. And I asked Thais in a webinar, tell me how to break up with somebody. And I did it. And it was such a beautiful healing moment for me to be like, oh, I can walk away from a relationship. And like I said, my first relationship, my marriage was 23 years and it was awful most of those years. So what's the final straw? That's just such a individual personalized question because it just depends on, I guess, how deep the wounding is.
Right, right. Renee, any thoughts on that?
I definitely did break up with people. Yeah, I did definitely stayed too long when it was someone I really cared about, but there is plenty of people that I broke up with. And I think that it was a big one would be if they cheated, like that would be like, non-negotiable for me. Like then my worst nightmare came to fruition and I was done. So if they cheated, definitely that would be it. And the other thing for me that would hurt me really deeply, especially because I dated a lot of, I think, DAs or FAs that lean DA that became very DA with me when I was really AP, is if they would feel annoyed with me a lot or act annoyed with me a lot. That was a deep wound for me, and that would really be painful. Like if I felt like a burden or felt like I was annoying someone, and I didn't like to deal with that for too long. So, and I didn't have really good ways of expressing it when I was more unhealed, but that didn't work well for me.
So I wanted to go on a more positive note, not that any of this is negative. What are some of the AP superpowers, or what are some positive things that we can point to that APs have as traits, or what can people learn from APs?
Well, we definitely can be very warm and friendly, and we definitely see, I know for me, I definitely would see the best in people. I would have a hard time finding flaws. And like, so we're thinking the best of you. And I remember telling my DA boyfriend before we broke up, like, the problem is I always see the best in you and you always see the worst in me, because he was always flaw finding. And I felt like he would look at me in this negative light. And I always looked at him so positive. And my friends would be like, aren't you mad at him? He's like doing this, this, and this, and that's not cool, and blah, blah, blah. And like, so it's a superpower, but we also have to watch it. We have to kind of equilibrate and see the person's negative traits too, because we tend to look more at people on the positive side.
Right.
I like that I see the positive in people. I just have to remind myself sometimes if they have some negative qualities, let's balance it out, especially if it's a romantic partner, and see if they're a fit for you.
No, it's super sweet. And then like, obviously avoidant types who maybe their parents didn't give them a lot of like warmth and emotional connection and compliments or whatever. Then when an AP comes by and says, oh, you're awesome, or I love the way you do this, or whatever, you're hearing all these compliments and it's just like, oh my gosh, this feels so good. We obviously know how that turns out. It sort of becomes a little one-way street action, but it is really sweet that you do that. And I've noticed that you do that as well, Renee, like not as a bad thing, but you definitely see people, like the good in people. And it's really hard for you to find something that you think is like not good about someone. I think that's pretty awesome. Amanda, what would you say?
That's a great answer. While you're flaw finding me, I'm just having all these googly eyes and so excited about you. My last relationship, I was told, I feel so safe with you. I feel so supported by you. I encourage, I believe in you. And I'm not sure if this is an AP thing or an Amanda Harris thing. I cook a mean meal. I tear it up in the kitchen.
Nice.
I love to cook for my family, my kids and my boyfriend. But we're very giving. We're very, I think, across the board. But we do need to be sure to rein it in and make sure that we're receiving is all. I had a firm rule: if I cook dinner, he's going to do the dishes. Anyway,
I think a lot of couples have that rule. I like it. I think it's a good rule. Okay, so I just wanted to dive in a little more into your both your sort of personal healing, just to get a sense of some of the ways that you found success in healing anxious, preoccupied attachment style. So what would you say were some of the most impactful tools, habits, or like mindset that helped you heal from anxious, preoccupied?
Yeah, for me, definitely emotional regulation. I needed it so badly. And so that's why it's like a passion for me to teach, because it made a huge difference. But that combined with doing the needs course, of course, the core wounds work and everything too. But my biggest shift was when I took the needs course. I felt so just comfortable in my own skin for the first time ever. I could self-soothe myself. I felt so empowered and so good. And it was just amazing. It was like so great. So I highly recommend the needs course for any APs. And once I met my needs, I felt really solid. And I still feel really solid ever since taking that. So that's what worked for me the best.
I love that. And Amanda?
So I'm gonna talk about needs, but I'm gonna elaborate on wounds too. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting in a webinar and Thais said, if you had a partner right now, what would you want him to do for you? And I thought, well, I would want him to take me on a beach vacation. And then she says, do it for yourself. And I said, that's stupid. I'm not doing it. No way, no how, right? But it was probably February, March. I scheduled a Puerto Rican vacation for June. And in the meantime, I was doing the core wound reprogramming. The way I do it and the way I teach my clients to do it is I have them make a video recording of themselves, you know, talking to themselves and saying you're loved and connected and by this person and remember this story. And I was watching those and you matter and watching those videos every morning. And so don't get me wrong, as it got closer and closer to that Puerto Rican vacation, I got pretty squirrely. I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this. Every time I'd go to schedules, like all the videos or couples holding hands on the beach and all the things for the beautiful beach vacation. But back, I went on the lots of people in PDS have heard the story, but I went on that vacation and I walked around that island like I owned the place. And I was a confident, independent, single woman. And I never could have done that without PDS.
Wow. I love that. That's so cool. I'm so happy you did that for yourself. Cool. PDS for the win.
Oh, great.
Okay. So I wanted to know what's sort of been the best thing you've experienced since doing all this work on healing. How are things different in the relationship with others, the relationship to yourself? What are some like big changes that are just really awesome since you've done this work?
For me, definitely just feeling solid in myself and not feeling like I need any relationship in particular, feeling so comfortable being by myself. I was never even close to feeling okay by myself. I always had a boyfriend since I was 5 years old up until the past few years. Always had a boyfriend. And so now I'm so comfortable by myself. It feels so good. And I look forward to dating and doing all of those things, but it's not from a place of need anymore. It's just from a place where it's kind of more like icing on the cake instead of the whole cake. So it feels so good to have that. And same thing with friends. Like I used to, when something happened, I was telling someone this recently, like when something happened to me that caused any kind of reaction, I would be dialing a phone before I even felt it fully. Like I always would have to be telling like a friend or a boyfriend or someone, like someone was helping me process it. And now it's like when anything happens and I'm feeling the emotions, I know how to process them. I sit with them for a moment. So it's, and I guess the biggest shift is like, I'm not ever emotionally dumping anymore. Like I'm always processing everything myself. So, and I think before I just emotionally dumped and a lot of my friends were codependent. So they loved it. I remember when I first started healing, my friend, something happened, something big in my life. And I just sat with it and I was like, okay, I know I can handle anything. That's how I feel. And then I didn't call him right away. And he was like, that happened to you 15 minutes ago and you didn't let me know.
That's hilarious.
Like, wow. I just realized like, wow, I never really sat with things myself and processed them. So that's a really good shift.
That's so lovely. And as a part two, I want to ask you, and then we'll get to Amanda. You said your friend noticed. Would you say a lot of people around you noticed, like friends, family, like were people commenting on like, Renee, like there's something different about you?
Yeah. A couple people got a little bit upset that I wasn't calling them as much, but it was just, I just felt so comfortable being alone. I really cherished my alone time.
Yeah.
So I did have a couple friends that were like, you never call anymore and this and that. So I had to just let them know. I've just done a lot of healing work. I'm just really enjoying time by myself. I've never been comfortable spending time by myself. And also the other thing is I had ADHD, and once I did the needs course, that was helped my ADHD the most. I actually could focus better, read better. So I was just like doing all these things that were so enjoyable, studying, reading, doing personal growth. So yeah, I did take a huge step back from social connection. It became so much lower down on my needs list. And then it didn't pop back up like a year later, but it was almost like a good solid year where I was just wanted to be by myself. Like, this is great. I love reading, learning, being alone.
Yeah. So, almost like starting the relationship with yourself for the first time and just being really excited about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Thanks for sharing. Yeah. Amanda, what were some of the positives about healing your attachment style?
So definitely feeling less triggered. I'm like, wow, that would have really upset me before. And I'm kind of not the different things. And you have to be careful with that. I remember asking Thais this in a webinar one time, because sometimes it's easy to not set boundaries because I'm less triggered, right? So I had to kind of learn how to integrate that. Just because I'm less triggered doesn't mean that that's cool, right? But the one thing along the same lines as the Puerto Rico trip, just learning to, because I am a big social person and fun and recreation are big needs for me. So it's Saturday and I want to go listen to some live music. I get in my car and I go and sit at the bar on my own and order some wings and beer and listen to live music. I don't have to rely on having someone go with me. Or just over Christmas, I went on my first cruise on my own. And people will say, by yourself? And I said, no, there were 3,000 other people on the phone. What are you talking about? So learning, no, not by myself, but learning that I don't have to put my life on hold waiting for a partner, right? I'm going to go on trips and I'm going to go to the movies and I'm going to do whatever it is I need to do, whether I the cooking, since I love doing that for a partner so much, it's been hard for me to learn how to do that for myself, but I deserve it. Meal just as much as the other people in my life do. So learning that I have a full happy life with or without a partner, I think has been the biggest thing.
I love that. That's amazing. And yeah, as the part two, would you say people really noticed a shift in you? Family, kids? No,
nobody's here. No, if they did, they didn't say it. My relationship with my kids improved a lot. They're teenagers, so whether or not they said anything, they felt it, you know. And so whenever a girl would get mad and snap at me, and instead of me getting upset and escalating, you know, I'm able to calmly say, hey, that's not cool. And then later on, she'll say, Mom, I'm sorry, I yelled, rather than me getting upset and triggered, and then she's upset and triggered. So I mean, they didn't necessarily say anything, but I know that they felt it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're coming towards the end of the episode. Just a couple more questions, guys. And thank you so much for being here again. So speaking on behalf of all the APs, what would you want people to know about anxious preoccupieds that people might have misunderstood?
That's such a good one too. There was one time that I can remember, I think it was someone that had an FA attachment. But a lot of times, this person had said in particular, like, they were very upset with an AP and they were saying something about, like, well, I know everything they did was fake because they were just people pleasing. And I just kind of want to say something about that. And it's not that when you're people pleasing, you're doing anything fake. Like, APs really genuinely, we really care about our partners. We really want to do nice things for them. And yes, of course, we want to be loved and reassured, but it's not the sole reason we're doing all of these things. It is also because we care. And it doesn't mean that it's fake because there's some people pleasing involved. That's one thing that I've heard that kind of hurt. I was just like, oh man, yeah, we do people please, but it doesn't mean it's all fake. Like, it's not. Yeah, it's there's some genuineness to it, and we do genuinely care, and we do want to, you know, show that care to our partner.
Okay, lovely. And Amanda,
what do I want people to know about APs?
Yeah, if anybody who's not AP and kind of is confused by AP behavior and might have a negative light, is there anything you want to shed?
Yeah, just like with all the attachment styles, we came by it naturally. You know, my father didn't abandon me on purpose when he died, but I was abandoned. So that is in there in my guts and in my bones and my subconscious. And we're not doing it to punish you. We're doing it because I'm afraid if you leave me, I might die. You know, Thais talks about that that's the thing whenever you're a baby or a small person, that's the one of the fears, that if you're abandoned, you'll die. Right. So I'm not just trying to be whiny or needy or clingy. I'm not trying to punish you. And even though I've gotten way better, because people would kind of criticize me. Well, if your marriage is so bad, why don't you leave it? Well, I would say I wasn't scared of being alone. I just went to the grocery store by myself. What are you talking about? but you know, at the end of the day, I was scared of being my bed. And since my breakup, my two girls, I have twin daughters, they moved out of the house and went to the dorm. So this is the first time that I've ever lived on, like whenever I went through my divorce, I had never lived by myself. I was in that relationship since I was 16. So that being alone is, or that fear of abandonment is very real. And just to try to have some patience with it, and that we come by it naturally, just like the DAs and just like the FAs, it's all coming from a place of legit woundedness.
100%. Mm-hmm. Very well said. Thank you, Amanda. And lastly, for anyone AP, anxious, preoccupied, who's listening, who's struggling, maybe hasn't gone to therapy or hasn't done any healing work or whatever, and they're just really unsure of like what to do, what sort of words of advice or encouragement would you give them?
Yeah, definitely know you can heal, you can get better, you can feel comfortable in your own skin and less needy. And that's so great when that leaves you. And I think the Personal Development School does a great job of bundling the courses for the AP, and they're so great right now. It's like, and needs is like, I think the second course, there's like Handbook mm-hmm. for a Better Life. And then you look at the needs, and as you work on the core wounds, the healing happens, and then it just kind of snowballs. Like initially it's so hard to imagine yourself without a partner, so it's hard to focus on doing the work and all of that. But once you start chipping away at the core wound, you do the needs course, you're going to be feeling so much better. And there's so much support at PDS, and because APs love the connection and the chatting, and you can, you know, talk to other people that have gone through it. And that's what helped me the most, is like coming into PDS and seeing other APs that did the healing. And actually, Amanda was someone that I totally related to in the scripts. And like, I saw that she kept encouraging me to keep going. So I was like, this isn't working. It's not going to work. Trying to soothe myself, trying to put on fuzzy socks and hug myself. Like, it's not the same as a man. But it just gets so much better. And you really get to such a level where you can self-soothe and you can feel really good without a partner. It's amazing. And it feels great. So hang in there, APs. You can do it and you will feel great.
Oh, lovely.
Wrap up in a blanket.
Amanda, any words of inspiration?
My words of inspiration, it's more like a demand. Do not skip auto-suggestion. I cannot, I was always surprised and amazed at the people in the after, almost at after party, but after the webinars that were like finding the opposing evidence, and in the morning or in the night, whenever I was working on my I'm alone, I did it in morning and night, because it was so deep. Mm-hmm. And she recently said, or somebody told me that they recently heard her say, because I think that I was left at the hospital too, whenever I was a baby. And my mother said that she visited me, but I'm not sure how much. But in any event, I was talking to a client that said that they heard her say on a webinar that oftentimes when it's pre-verbal, that we may even need 63 days of auto-suggestion to get in touch that, because it's steep. Yeah. And so finding that opposing evidence and that emotion and the repetition and listening to it or writing it or whatever medium you choose, the auto-suggestion is a game changer. So do not skip auto-suggestion. And I think that's in the Handbook for a Better Life and in the Emotional Mastery.
Great.
So that's, it's so, so vital.
Perfect. Thank you so much for sharing. Okay, so we're at the end now. Before we leave, Renee and Amanda, I was wondering if you could leave some contact information if anybody wanted to work with you. Obviously, you guys have done a lot of work on yourselves. You've both now taken the Integrated Attachment Theory certification course and are now coaching. So we'd just love for you to leave your information. And if anybody wants to work with either of you, they can go ahead and do that. Renee, do you want to go first?
Sure. Thank you so much, Mike. Yes. So my website is livingyourbestlife11@wixsite.com. So livingyourbestlife11@wixsite.com is how you could find me. Also, my email is renee@thepersonaldevelopmentschool.com. You could email me there as well. And thank you so much for having us. This was really fun.
Oh, good. That's great. Is 11 angel numbers? What's the 11?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, kind of like an angel number, opening of something new coming in for you.
I love it. Beautiful. And Amanda?
My email address is AmandaHarrisCoaching@gmail.com. And my website is AmandaHarrisCoaching.com. And love to see you guys and talk to any of you guys. I have openings and testimonials there on my website.
Perfect. Thanks again so much. I think you guys represented Anxious Preoccupied very, very well. And hopefully everyone learned a lot and people are inspired to do the work themselves too. So thanks again for being here, Renee and Amanda.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay. To our audience, as always, best of luck on your healing journey, and we'll see you next time.